afternoon to one and all from the UK. Welcome to What's Cooking for September. I hope I find you all well, and I hope you've all enjoyed your summer. Seems a little bit sad to think that autumn is pretty much here. Certainly feels very autumnal over here in the UK. However, I hope you are ready to sit back and enjoy today's show. We've got a full programme as usual. So, what's cooking? Today we're going to talk about dessert. Pudding, sweet, afters. Basically different terms for the same thing. Well, what can I say about dessert or pudding, whatever you like to call it? Millions and millions of recipes for pudding, and it can be made as easy or as complicated as you like. Something as simple as a piece of fruit, cheese, some nuts or dried fruit, to something very elaborate and fancy that you might eat in a restaurant while you're out, or you might wish to try making yourself. But how did our love of desserts first start? When did we start eating dessert? In the Middle Ages, rich people ate desserts like preserved fruits, jelly, and wafers made from batter. Furthermore, the Italians have been eating panettone since at least the 15th century, but its origins are lost in legend. The Romans knew that eggs could be used for binding. However, custard, as we know it, was invented in the Middle Ages. In the Middle Ages, most puddings were meat-based. Rice pudding was known, but until the 19th century, it was regarded as a medicine. It was supposed to be good for digestive ailments. The Tudors were also fond of desserts, if they could afford them. The rich ate preserved fruit, gingerbread, sugared almonds, and jelly. However, in the 16th century, sugar was very expensive, so most people used honey to sweeten their food. Marzipan was popular in England from the 15th century. Marzipan is a paste made of almonds and sugar. The Tudors used marzipan to make edible sculptures of animals, castles, trees and people, called subtleties. At Christmas, the Tudors enjoyed mince pies, but they had far more significance than today, in that they had 13 ingredients to represent Jesus and the apostles. They contained fruit, raisins, currants, prunes, and spices, cloves, mace, black pepper, saffron, and also mutton to represent the shepherds. The fashion was for them to be shaped like a crib, but this practice was banned by Oliver Cromwell. The Tudors also had Christmas pudding, but this was shaped like a sausage and contained meat, oatmeal and spices. Another dessert, syllabub, was invented in the 16th century. Moreover, Banbury cakes were first mentioned in 1586. By the end of the 16th century, people in England were eating fruit fool. Its name has nothing to do with idiots. It is derived from the French word foule, meaning to mash. Blancmange was originally a chicken stew flavoured with almonds, but in the 17th century it became a white dessert. Barley sugar also dates from the 17th century. Bread and butter pudding became a common dish around this time, and people in England first began eating yoghurt. In the late 17th century, the rich began eating ice cream. Many rich people built special underground chambers in the grounds of their houses for preserving ice during the summer. The ice was covered in straw to preserve it. In the 18th century, people began to eat trifle, similar to the modern dessert. Furthermore, the French invented mousse in the 18th century. So there's our little potted history on dessert. And for our first recipe today, we are going to hear about making tiramisu, a very popular dessert, I know. Not with me, I hasten to add, but very popular with lots of people. So if you've ever wondered how to make this, let's find out how.
Now, most of us have eaten tiramisu, the creamy Italian dessert made with mascarpone, sponge fingers, coffee and some sort of alcohol. But most of us would have bought it ready-made at the supermarket. Russell Norman cooks the perfect tiramisu. It means, Russell, pick me up. What's its origin?
It's quite a recent invention. It was created in the 1970s. In Treviso, which is on the mainland just beside Venice. In a restaurant, there are various versions of it, but in a restaurant that is probably still there today. And in that very short time, it's become, I guess, the quintessential Italian dessert.
What sort of coffee should you use? Does it have to be a really good espresso?
To make a very good tiramisu, you need very good coffee. You should use espresso. If you can't use espresso, then you should use the next best thing, which is filter coffee, strong filter coffee.
And how do you start to make the dish?
So you start actually with the coffee. You make your espresso. So if you're making 12 pots, we like to make our tiramisus individually. So the recipe I'm going to talk you through now would make 12 pots. And you'd need 6 double espressos or 360 mils of very strong coffee. You start with that, and your coffee's nice and warm. It means that the sugar's going to dissolve quite easily.
So you put the sugar into the coffee.
You start with about 50 grams of the sugar and all of the rum. You're going to need about 4 tablespoons of dark rum for this.
Now, some recipes say use Tia Maria or Amaretto. Why do you like rum?
Rum, I think, works better in food recipes. It works well in drinks too and in cocktails. But I think when I've tried tiramisu with brandy, for example, it's got too much of an alcohol flavour. And rum tends to be a little subtler, I think. It's made from sugar, after all. And it tends to sit better with the other ingredients.
So where do we go after we've done the coffee,
so
the sugar,
we've got 50 grams of the sugar with the espresso and with the rum, and that then is set aside. You're going to be using that concoction, that mixture, to soften the sponge fingers that we'll come to later. The next thing you're going to do is separate your eggs. So for the 12 individual pots, you're going to need 6 medium eggs.
Now, you're not a chef, you're a restaurateur, but you are a home cook.
Let's see how
you manage to crack this egg.
Now, you've made me nervous.
So slowly separate it, yeah. Let the white drip into the bowl.
Yeah.
And you didn't break the yolk, it's in the other half of the shell. Well done.
So we'll just do another one of those. And although you're separating the yolks from the whites, it's quite an involved process, but you're going to end up putting them back together. So we're going to start to whisk the whites in the separate bowl. Now, I could carry on until they get stiff peaks.
We do have one you prepared earlier, which is sitting right next to me. But, I mean, do you make that as stiff as you'd make it for a meringue?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. You want a nice, not solid, but you want a nice substantial cream to make your mascarpone egg mix. And then with the yolks, so you've got your whites that are lovely and stiff on the other side, with the yolks with a fork or with another separate cream whisk, what you're doing here is you're mixing in the remaining caster sugar, 120 ml of marsala, which is another booze.
Yes, it's a very, very boozy pudding, isn't it?
Can you use any
other sweet wine if you don't happen to have marsala around?
You can. I've seen people use port, which I think is a little bit strong. I'd use a sweet sherry if you can't get hold of marsala. But it's pretty easy to get hold of these days. And then once those yolks are pale and fluffy, you add the mascarpone and you gently stir it in.
Now, the mascarpone, should that be straight from the fridge, cold, or should you let it go to room temperature first?
You can take it straight from the fridge.
And that goes where?
And that goes into the yolk. So what we have now is we have three mixtures. We have the coffee and rum here. We have the egg whites here. And we have the egg yolks with the remaining sugar and the Marsala and the mascarpone. And now what we're going to do is we're going to fold the whisked whites into the yolks.
So they do get mixed back together very quickly. Okay, and then when does the mascarpone go in now?
That's it.
Right.
And the remaining egg ingredients come together with a mascarpone to create this cream here.
Now, what about the sponge fingers? I notice that you have got long sponge fingers, mother, for some bizarre reason, always used for her trifles and things, and called them funeral biscuits. I have never found out why they were called funeral biscuits.
I've never
biscuits.
Had them called that. These ones are called ladies' fingers.
And where are they from? Are they Italian ones?
They are. Yeah, you find them all over the place in Italy, but they're very easy to get hold of here as well.
So you soak those in the
coffee? So you soak these in the coffee, yeah. So here we go. We take one, we're putting it into the coffee mixture. And it takes usually about 20 to 30 seconds for them to soften. You don't want them to dissolve completely. You don't want them to separate. But once you've got a nice soggy biscuit, you take it, break it into two, like this, and lay it in the bottom of your individual glass.
And then you just add all the other ingredients.
And then it really is a simple case of construction. This is a recipe where all the hard work is done with the eggs, and then the easy part, which is sort of layering the different ingredients.
It looks very pretty. I've got one here. Do you mind if I try it? I really can't wait. You carry on mixing.
I'm carrying
that
on. You've got the one I made earlier.
Yeah, here's the
one. And you really are just layering.
Cocoa powder on the top.
That's it.
Oh.
Is that all right?
That is what I think I would describe as absolutely gorgeous. You brought this kind of restaurant from Venice. You describe it as a baccara. What essentially is a baccara?
Well, the great shame, I guess, in terms of Venice restaurants, is that they are generally quite poor. They tend to pander to the lowest common denominator, and sell and serve the sort of food that tourists who've been on their feet all day crave, which is
spaghetti,
poor, exactly,
pizza,
mounds of pasta, lasagna, the sort of stuff that is really not typical of the area at all and typical of the city. But if you go to the very small wine bars in the back streets, these baccaro, you will find the sort of true culinary heart of Venice. These places make small dishes, they use local ingredients, and it's where you find most of the locals.
A little bit like tapas, in a way.
It is, yeah. It's lots of small plates, little tastes. They tend not to spend very much time in these places. They tend to have a little glass of wine, a little snack, and then move on to the next one, a little bit like a sort of food pub crawl.
Russell Norman, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you
very much indeed.
Next up, we have a recipe for spiced rice pudding. This soothing, creamy rice pudding is made extra special with the simple addition of ginger. For this recipe, you will need 150 grams, 7 ounces, pudding rice, 500 ml, 17 fluid ounces, milk, 500 ml, 17 fluid ounces water, 4 tablespoons sugar, 3 small lumps stem ginger, 2 tablespoons candied fruit, 1 heaped tablespoon orange zest, 1 heaped tablespoon lemon zest, 3 to 4 tablespoons cream to taste, crystallized orange peel to serve. And
this is what you do.
Put the rice into a heavy based saucepan, pour in the water and milk, and bring to the boil. Turn the heat down so that the rice simmers gently and leave for 15 minutes, partially covered with a lid. Roughly dice the stem ginger and candied fruit. When the 15 minutes have elapsed and the rice is soft and sticky, tip in the ginger, fruit and zest along with the sugar. Turn off the heat and put the lid on and allow the fruits and spice to infuse gently for 5 minutes. Taste the rice and add a little more sugar if needs be. Then finally stir in enough cream to allow the rice to slide slowly from a spoon. You can chill the pudding or eat it warm. For a bit of added crunch, serve with a few shards of crystallised orange peel. Next, we have a recipe for chocolate mousse. Now, anything with chocolate in it is a popular dessert, certainly with me anyway, and I'm sure with lots of other people as well. So, here we are. Let's hear how to make chocolate mousse.
Today, Lorraine Pascal will cook the perfect chocolate mousse. Lorraine,
Hello.
You have begun the mousse.
How have you begun it? Well, I have in here some double cream, 200ml of double cream. I've just heated that through and I've snapped some chocolate in, and I've got quite a sweet tooth, so I've used an equal balance of dark and milk chocolate. If you like it more bitter, you can just use more dark chocolate.
And a really good quality chocolate, I'm assuming, not the kind that's described as cooking chocolate.
Yes, yeah, I never use cooking chocolate. It is good quality chocolate. With the exception, when you're using white chocolate, the cheaper stuff is actually better because it melts more beautifully.
And you've just, as we were discussing that, popped the egg yolks into the chocolate mix.
Yes? So I've got three, I've separated three medium eggs, and I've whisked the three egg whites here with 3 tablespoons of sugar. And the yolks have gone into the chocolate and the cream, so I'm just stirring it through. This is a super easy recipe, really easy. So there, it's lovely, if you could see, velvety and smooth.
It's like something out of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, isn't it? Lovely, gloopy, chocolatey mix. I know this recipe will be made of raw eggs when we come to the end, because the yolks have gone in the chocolate, the white you've whisked up.
Yes.
How safe are you with raw eggs?
Well, get the freshest eggs. So the day you're going to make this, buy the eggs on that day. Make sure you've kept them nice and cold. And I suggest not giving the dish to the very young, the infirm or pregnant ladies. So that's a kind of the protection mechanism.
But you eat it quite happily.
Oh, yes.
I have to ask you this question. I know you bake and you make lovely things and sweet things. And this chocolate mousse is, you know, every foodie's delight. How do you stay so slim when you're eating all this stuff?
Well, I suppose when I'm testing recipes and I'm just pouring this chocolate mix into the egg whites as we speak, and when I'm testing recipes, I do probably put on about a stone, because it's just eat, and then, well, that's really good, I'll eat the whole thing, that kind of thing. But I do work out a lot, but when I'm not testing recipes, I do eat quite a balanced meal, lots of proteins, only cakes occasionally for treats. So, you know, my diet is not, everyday diet is not what is on the show.
You don't have chocolate mousse every night.
Don't have chocolate mousse of an evening, every evening, no.
whilst you're stirring, I must just ask you how you keep the air into that. When you've whisked the egg whites and then you put the chocolatey mix in, how are you keeping the air in it so that it stays light and fluffy?
Well, the first key is whisking up the egg whites. So you whisk them up to halfway, and then you add a tablespoon or so of sugar and whisk them up again. And then keep whisking and gently add the sugar. It's called meringuing the foam. You gently add the sugar as you're whisking, preferably an electric hand whisk. And you just keep whisking until they get really white and shiny, like lovely emulsion paint colour, that sheen. So that gives you a good start to when you're folding everything together. And it's actually, people think you should do it slowly, but you're actually going to keep more in if you do it quite quickly, just get it over and done with. So it's scooping underneath the bowl, lifting it over the top, cutting in the middle and scooping it over again, and just making sure that all the white is mixed in. It doesn't matter if it's not all mixed in, it's all going to taste lovely.
All right, let's go back to that day when you were shopping in Covent Garden and the talent scout, who had also spotted Naomi Campbell, spotted you. How did it come about?
I was just with friends in Covent Garden wandering around, trailing behind them, and somebody came up to me with a card, and I just thought, oh yeah, what's this? Sounds a bit dodgy.
Weirdo.
Yeah, I was about to run. But then they said, oh look, I'm a professional model scout, here's my card, would you like to be a model? Call this agency. You know, they're in the Association of Model Agencies, which is the list, so they're bona fide. And I called them, and that was it. The rest is history. Well, it was quite a hard graft. Lots of knocking on doors, lots of rejection.
What sort of knocking on doors did you have to do? I mean, if you got into an agency and they'd taken you on, how difficult can it be after that?
Well, it is incredibly difficult. Some girls, you know, they go into an agency and then they fly immediately. But for me, it was more the case of, you know, every morning you go to the agency, they give you a list of appointments. And so I'm just scooping the chocolate mousse into these ramekins here. And you'd have maybe 10 appointments, and it'll be going to see photographers who might want to use you, going to see magazines, advertisers. And you go, and you with your travel card, Old Street seemed to be the area where they mostly were. And you go and see them, show them your book. Sometimes they look through your book, are very interested. Other times they kind of, even though your book's got 20 pages in, they look at 3 and then say, thank you very much.
So why did you stick with it when it was so difficult? Did you know at some point it was going to take off?
I didn't. I just was pleased to get out of my little town. I love Whitney. I do. But I was eager to see bright lights. And so it was just a great opportunity to be in London.
And once it did take off and you started, yeah, I mean, you became an international model and travelling all over the world. Was it as exciting as you hoped it would be?
Actually, no, it's not as exciting as it appears to be, as the movies make out and the newspapers make out. It's very, very, very boring. Lots of sitting around. And when you're a model, they're not really interested in your opinion. You know, so I did a shoot yesterday. They wanted, for a newspaper, they wanted to hear what I wanted to wear and this. But when you're doing it for as a model, they just, those are the clothes. This is what you have to wear. Just get on with it. If you don't like it, too bad. Even if you are a size 8 and the shoes are size 6, just put them on and be quiet.
I mean, you were young when it started. You were 16, but not as young as some of the models are. I mean,
yes.
Some of them were starting at 13 and 14. Were you better prepared because you were that little bit older?
I think back then they weren't quite so young. I've got chocolate mousse. So I've put all of the chocolate mousse in the ramekins. I'm just about to give you one. Now, it's not set, but it's still going to taste delicious. And I'm going to put some raspberries on top for you as well. I think back then the models were actually sort of starting more at 16. I think now they find some 12-year-old, don't they, in Russia or something.
And would you disapprove of that?
Absolutely.
Being so young.
Well, I think it's so important, the whole thing about school. It's not just about education. It's also about socialising, learning to become a young adult, making friends that you're going to have for a lifetime. It's also about that. So 16, 18, 21. I think 21 is a great age, maybe, to start modelling. But I think 16 is too young.
That chocolate mousse is very, very good indeed. And
thank
it goes
you.
Really well with the raspberries. And if you were chilling it, how long would you chill it for?
We could just whack it in the freezer, actually, for 10 minutes and it would be lovely and firm. But also you could make it in the morning and it would be ready for the evening in the fridge.
Lorraine Pascal, thank you very much indeed for being with us.
Thank you.
Our final recipe today is for forest fruit crumble with custard. For this recipe, you will need 100 grams, 3.5 ounces butter, plus extra for greasing, 100 grams, 3.5 ounces caster sugar, 4 ready-made ginger biscuits, 120 grams, 4 ounces pistachio nuts, 55 grams, 2 ounces plain flour, 200 grams, 7 ounces frozen forest fruits. For the custard, 5 tablespoons milk, 5 tablespoons double cream, 1 free-range egg yolk, 1 tablespoon caster sugar, and
this is what you do.
1. Preheat the oven to 200 degrees C, that's 400 degrees F, gas 6. 2. Grease an oven-proof dish with butter. 3. Place the butter, sugar, ginger biscuits, pistachios and flour into a food processor and pulse until the mixture resembles breadcrumbs. 4. Place a layer of frozen forest fruits into the base of the oven-proof dish and top with the crumble mixture. 5. Transfer to the oven and bake for 10 to 15 minutes until the topping is crisp and golden. 6. For the custard, place the milk and cream into a saucepan over a medium heat and heat until steaming. Remove from the heat and allow to cool slightly. 7. Whisk the egg yolk and sugar together in a bowl. 8. Gradually pour the milk and cream mixture into the yolk and sugar, whisking constantly. 9. Return the custard mixture to the milk saucepan and simmer gently over a medium heat, stirring constantly until the custard thickens and coats the back of a spoon. 10. Strain the custard through a sieve into a jug. 11. To serve, spoon a portion of the crumble into a bowl and pour over custard. Now we have a little bit of time left before the end of the show today, so I'm going to set one of my little challenges that I give you from time to time. This is just for a bit of fun, no prizes, nothing like that. Let's see if you've been listening today, shall we? At the beginning of the programme, we had a recipe for tiramisu. And I want to know, what does tiramisu mean? It's somewhere there in the recipe, listeners, so what does tiramisu mean? If you want to contact the programme with queries, feedback, ideas for future shows, recipes you might like to share with other listeners, you can do so in the usual way by emailing cooking@theglobalvoice.info. That's C-O-O-K-I-N @theglobalvoice.info. That's also where you can email your answer to my little challenge. To download or to listen to this programme again, go to theglobalvoice.info/gallery, where incidentally you can find archives of all What's Cooking shows. You can also go to incx.org, where you can subscribe to the What's Cooking podcast. Well, time seems to have flown by today. Well, I certainly think so anyway, and that's all we have time for. So, until I'm with you again, this is Sue Hadfield saying take care of yourselves and each other. And as always, happy cooking!